Episode 190 von Win Today, Hockey O'Clock. Jordan Smotherman, Head Coach, TIVA Innsbruck, die Haie.
What was enticing about coming back to Europe? You've played your fair share of your active playing career in Europe, but what was it that got you here as a coach?
Coaching. The ability to coach. The East Coast Hockey League, you are a general manager and you are a coach. And you are 75% a general manager and 25% a coach. My passion in the game lies in being behind the bench. It lies in watching the video, being on the ice with the guys in practice, staying until the end of practice and working with guys on skills. That's where my passion in hockey lies.
Win today, Hockey O'Clock.
In diesem Augenblick wird es jetzt richtig hitzig. Yeah, und die Scheibe kollert über die Linie. Yeah. Mittendrin statt nur dabei. Das ist unglaublich, was die vier zelebrieren.
Nice move, another nice move.
This is a conversation I've been looking forward to for a very long time, because every year in the Win Today Ice Hockey League, we get new people, we get new coaches, we get new players. And especially with coaches, I'm always kind of adamant in meeting them in person. And this is what indeed brought me to Innsbruck today, albeit with half an hour of a train delay, but I'm still very happy to finally meet with him, to finally talk to him. He's, of course, head coach Jordan Smotherman, and he's now right opposite me. Coach, thanks for doing this.
Well, we're very excited to host you here. So,
Coach, I'm catching you at a very interesting time because you're leaving today for a huge game against Asiago. This conversation will come out tomorrow, so Innsbruck fans will have 12 hours to listen to this before the big game finally comes around. And you're about to leave on the bus. So if there is a bus ride, what's the one thing, the one device that you wouldn't want to miss on a bus?
My iPad, for sure. On the day before game, if I don't have my shows or my iPad, it makes for a very, very long trip. That or a nice little sleeping mat to be able to lay down on the floor. So,
well, let's start with the leisure part. Fill me in on the shows on the iPad. What's on heavy rotation right now?
Today, there's a new show that just came out on Prime, Cross. It's Alex Cross. James Patterson's a big mystery novelist back home. It's his big character. Amazon just did a show. He's a detective, murder mystery kind of thing. So that's what I'm into right now.
Before you came here, you were coaching the East Coast Hockey League, which is commonly known as a bus league. So I guess you've been on your fair share of bus rides as a coach too. Going to games and coming home from games, what's the ratio between work, sleep, and indeed time for yourself?
So first, I got to say, I was extremely fortunate the last 2 years as a coach. We were the only team in the East Coast Hockey League that had our own plane. So we, if the trip was more than 3 hours, we pretty much took the plane. Again, very spoiled when it comes to that. But the work to play ratio when it comes to the bus trips, like today, for us, the video work on Asiago, we've done already. We've showed the guys pre-scout, we've talked about it. So that stuff's all done. So today's a day to relax, maybe start looking ahead at the next game against VLOC and start getting some of that tape ready. On the way there, I'd say it's about 50-50. On the way back after the game, I usually take about 45 minutes, just listen to some music, relax, and then pull the game up. I share a monitor with Nino next to me, and we go through the game together, and we cut the clips that we want to show the guys and cut things for individuals that we want to send them. So the trip home is usually solidly 100% done cutting video.
I'll get to the pre-scout for the Asiago game. I'll get to the video that you've been watching and preparing and showing to the guys. But first, you have to fill in some blanks. As you're still a very new coach, and Innsbruck isn't a team, unfortunately, that gets too much national exposure, I just want to help people understand what kind of head coach Innsbruck has gotten themselves. And I want to start from the very beginning, because place of birth says Corvallis, Oregon. Yep. USA. So you're US American, but your first time playing hockey, at the very least, hockey that was recorded in kind of a play sheet, was with the Quebec Compas in Quebec City. So if you drive that way from Corvallis to Quebec by car, it's 47 hours. Yeah. Just by car. How does one get from Oregon to Quebec?
So it was a path that took a few stops. So I was born in Oregon. When I was two, we moved to upstate New York. That's where I fell in love with hockey. They had an American Hockey League team in Binghamton, New York. And so we had season tickets to all those games. And then when I was like 12, my parents wanted to move us to an area where my brother and I could go to better schools, which brought us to the Boston area. So Boston is only about a 6.5 hour drive from Quebec City. So that that is how that ended up happening. I had played some time already in the highest junior hockey I could in the U.S., and I would have had 4 more years before going to college. So for me, playing major junior in Canada was the ideal situation to grow my game.
Now, the Quebec Remparts organization, I don't know a whole lot of people know this over here. I think it's partly owned or owned by Patrick Roy.
It was. So he recently sold his stake in the team maybe 5-6 years ago. He was their head coach until 2 years ago before he went back to the NHL. But when I played there, my first year, he wasn't very much involved. He was still playing in Colorado. I think he won a cup that year and retired immediately afterwards. He then became our general manager. And my last year there, he became the head coach. And so I actually got to play for him as a coach. To date, you know, one of my top three favorite coaches of all time.
How is he? How was he as a coach?
He's a bit of an asshole. I don't know. In a good way, though. You know, he held us accountable. It didn't matter if you were Alexander Radulov, who had 153 points in 55 games, or you were the guy that played 3 minutes a night and was 16 years old. He held everybody to the same standard every day. And that's what made us a really good hockey team and allowed us to win in the end. That, and he had a very unique perspective. And I asked him, you know, how do you know the game so well? You were just kind of sitting in the net. He said, well, I played X amount of years with the whole game in front of me. And he said, when I did video, I didn't just watch, you know, my shots and those things. I studied the whole game. I watched how our team played. I watched how the other team played. I knew where the breakdowns were going to be. I knew where the most chances in the way that we wanted to play were going to come from so that they weren't a surprise when it happened. So for that, you know, it made him a pretty incredible coach.
Now, what a lot of people over here just don't understand or just don't have within the grasp, because it doesn't have too much exposure on the other side of the pond, is just how big an operation the Remparts are, how big Quebec Major Junior Hockey League is, how big it is for teenagers to play in front of 10,000 people. Could you just sum up in your own words that experience those 4 years?
You know, it's funny. Everybody says when you're playing junior, love it, enjoy it, because this is the best time of your life. They're not wrong, especially getting to live and play in Quebec City. The fan base there is incredible. My last year there, I want to say we averaged somewhere in the 10,000 fans a night range. Some games having 16, 17,000 with standing room only. So for a 16 to 20-year-old kid to be able to do that, it's definitely a life experience. You have to grow up very fast.
You got perspective on this as you played for Quebec, and it's been heavily rumored to be getting an NHL team for quite some time. And if the NHL needs one thing, it's probably another Canadian team. And of course, this project in Arizona, of course, goes to Utah, and it's worked okay. But how bad is it that once again, Quebec didn't get one?
I was disappointed. I mean, they have the new rink that they just built there is beautiful. It would be a top-notch NHL facility. The fan base there, it's a smaller city, but there's no reason that they wouldn't sell that out every game, especially with the way the league is set up now with revenue sharing and things like that. I think, you know, from a long distance perspective, the finances of it should work out. But they are a hockey hungry city. And like I said, when you average 10 to 16,000
for junior hockey,
they'll sell out every game that they play in that building. So I'm holding my breath for that day that they get a team back, because I have a very special place in my heart for that city, and they deserve it.
It's just the entire region around it. A couple of years ago, I was fortunate enough to be working some projects in Mont-Saint-Anne, and you can't catch a person in Quebec who doesn't have an opinion on hockey. It's just talk of a region, basically. It's that crazy. So with that in mind, coming to an environment that's a little calmer, a little more, well, can still be hot out there, but yeah. The surroundings in Innsbruck, how was it when you got here?
It's definitely different. You know, we definitely have a passionate fan base. Compared to back home, you know, most of the fans that we had back home grew up playing the game. So it's a little bit different here where they've grown up watching the game. You know, every night we have a good atmosphere. Was it two games ago? They had the flags out down there and they do a good job giving us the energy that we should be able to feed off of.
In my opinion, this is one of the best rinks in the entire league because the way it's set up with the stands on top, if they bring their A game, it really kind of creates a pressure point on the ice. And from an acoustic standpoint, this is great. 100%. You've experienced that too.
I would not, all the time. Yeah, I would not want to have a bigger rink than this. It does. It packs the atmosphere in. They are right on top of the game. There are a few rinks in this league like this. I heard it was Fairhaver's old rink. Very much straight up and down like an old Shakespeare theater. And they were on top of the ice. This is the perfect size for this league and especially for this town and especially for our fan base. They do a wonderful job filling the rink with sound.
Just for your perspective, a couple of years ago when Feva was in the finals at the old rink, I brought a decibel meter and it checked out at 120 something decibels. And yeah, that's basically the equivalent of standing next to a fighter jet just starting. So they're loud. These fans here are loud too, but they haven't had much opportunity to get loud the past couple of games. Obviously, two disappointing home games, to say the very least, behind you with two losses, no goals scored. An offense, obviously, the big topic. I mean, we cannot circumvent this. And the big question upon all is, how do you start creating more offense? As we record this conversation, it's the fewest amount of goals scored. It's the lowest scoring output in the entire league. Again, two games without a goal. How do you turn this around?
We've been talking about it for a couple of weeks now. And for us in here and for what we've talked about in the room, it comes down to one thing. Goals are scored at the net. And we have to be stronger at the net. And not only do we have to be stronger at the net, we have to go there. We have too many guys right now that want to play on the outside that are hoping the puck bounces to them. And hope is not a strategy. You have to go and create chaos around the net. Teams do a good job of that against us because they know the way to beat us is to beat our goalie. And if they're in his face and they're constantly giving him a hard time, they're going to have an easier chance. And we need to return the favor. We need to be stronger around other teams' nets. We need to have a desire to go there. The last two goals that we scored in that Linz game, both created because guys drove the net and created some traffic. And we were able to find the late guy because we pulled everybody with us. That's what we need more of from the entire group. It can't just be one or two guys. And right now, we don't have that desire to go to the net. I said it in an interview this morning. It hurts to score goals. You know, you're going to get hit with a shot in front of the net, but that shot's going to hit you and it's going to bounce your feet. You're going to find a rebound and score. You're going to get cross-checked. You're going to get high-sticked. You're going to get into a wrestling match. But eventually, those ugly goals are going to start to go in. And for a team that's struggling to score, that's where you have to start.
Because that would have been my follow-up question. Does it have to be a group effort, or is it when you're looking at certain frames, certain players, that you're taking some, or that you want to see some taking up more responsibility than maybe other players? How does it work?
Right now, with the depth that we have in our group, and our group as a whole, we need it from everyone. We are not going to, in this league, outskill teams with our group. We have to outwork them. And we have to have a higher desire to win the battles, get to the dirty areas. I told the guys a couple days ago that we have to have some team toughness. Our penalty kill does a pretty good job. We're towards the top of the league.
Fourth
in the league with our penalty kill. So, you know, we can afford to take a penalty here or there because we play aggressive hockey. And that's something that we said to them, you know, after whistles, we need five guys in the crease. We need to have an identity as an annoying team to play against, because right now teams come to play us and it's not hard. It's pretty easy. We're not physical enough. We don't make teams work hard enough in front of our net. We don't work hard enough in front of their net. And we need to be harder. Right now, it's just too soft.
The keyword, or one of the many keywords that he uttered, is depth. And you can trace this back for a couple of years now, basically 5, 6, 7 years. Every time Innsbruck kind of stayed injury free and had the whole depth of their team at its avail, it was a successful year. One major injury, two major injuries to key contributors, everything kind of started to went south pretty fast. When you look at other teams in the league who have maybe four times the budget of Innsbruck, five times the budget of Innsbruck, how much can I envy this creep in? I know it's not a trade a coach should be having.
For sure. I mean, and then you add in some of the teams that that have 15, 16, 17 imports because of Italian passports, things like that. Yeah, there's definitely some discrepancy. But we have shown that, when we play the game the right way and we play it hard, we can compete with anybody. But it just becomes a matter of, can we do it for long enough? And we saw it last week. I thought for the majority of the first game, the first period especially, I thought we were the better team. We outplayed them. We took off the second period, and not even the whole second period. It's just bits and pieces of it where we step away from what makes us successful. And teams take advantage of that. The more mature, older teams take advantage of that. And then we play the Boutsen game. Obviously, Boots makes some big saves, but especially the first half of that game, it was a back and forth game. But it takes everything from us. We have to really give our all. And then we come into Sunday's game and you see the effect that a game like Friday has on our group, where we can have a very successful first period and we can keep up. And I think we outshot them in that period. I think we outchanced them in that period. And then it just happens over time in a week like that, where because it takes so much energy for our group right now to keep up and play with those top teams, that we run out of gas a little bit.
I'm not here to kind of find excuses together with you, but there are certain things where Innsbruck is at a disadvantage, and we'll try to get to a couple. And when we talk about these kind of disadvantages from a budget standpoint and maybe from the talent pool that you're fishing in, whereas other bigger organizations naturally get bigger and better imports, what did you think when you got yourself into this and put your signature on a contract, knowing that you'd probably have to not outskill but outfight your opposition more often than not? How did you head into this?
It's interesting. I watched a lot of video on the league. I watched a lot of video on our team in the past, and you can only learn so much from video. Not experiencing it for yourself, not seeing it firsthand, not being able to kind of get your hands on it and work with the group. So when I first came in, very optimistic, and I still am. I still really like our group. I still think we're growing. It's a slower process than everybody would like at this point right now, myself included, the players included. Everybody's a little frustrated with that aspect of things. But coming into it, I had high expectations. Funny, people laugh because when I was first asked about coming here, what's your goal? And I said to win a championship. People think that I'm delusional or crazy. No, I'm not delusional or crazy. I understand the circumstances here. But who am I to sit behind this desk and stand up in front of those guys if I don't go out there every day and tell them that we're playing to win?
And we've seen other teams go on a run and win a championship. So
yeah, and that's, no. Are the odds stacked up against us? Absolutely. But I can't honestly look my players in the eye if I don't show up every day, sit behind this desk and cut the video and work with them individually one-on-one and put the work in on our end and then go ask them to work as hard as we do. I can't do that if I don't come in here with that attitude.
You last coached the Worcester Railers in the East Coast Hockey League. What was enticing about coming back to Europe? You've played your fair share of your active playing career in Europe, but what was it that got you here as a coach?
Coaching. The ability to coach. The East Coast Hockey League, you are a general manager and you are a coach. And you are 75% a general manager and 25% a coach. My passion in the game lies in being behind the bench. It lies in watching the video, being on the ice with the guys in practice, staying until the end of practice and working with guys on skills. That's where my passion in hockey lies. And the job in that league very much doesn't allow you to do enough of that, or it didn't allow me to do enough of that.
Now, I was having a look at a roster. There are like 70 players on your roster.
Yeah. My last year playing, I think I had 79 teammates.
Jesus.
My 2 years of coaching, it was somewhere between 45 and 50 players that come through the locker room. And obviously you are subject to NHL call-ups from the American League. They take from you guys. You are the bottom of the totem pole. And so, I wake up, I had a Thursday night men's league beer game. And I come off the ice after that game and I have a text from Chris Lamoriello to give him a call. I step out of the locker room, I call him. He tells me that he's calling up two of my forwards. And I also have a text from my athletic trainer who's telling me that I have two players that aren't going to be able to play. So at 9:45 on a Thursday night before a Friday game, I have now lost four of my 12 forwards. I have eight forwards. I have a recently retired from a Division III college player in my locker room in my men's league. And I look across the room at him and I say, Paul, would you like to play a professional hockey game tomorrow? And he came and he actually ended up playing 10 games for us. He was pretty good. He wasn't bad. The following week, after I released, he was there for 2 weeks, I released him. I got a text that Thursday night from the coach in Orlando asking about him. And I looked again, I said, Paul, do you want to fly down to Orlando and play a game? And he went down there and scored two goals.
Of course he did.
Yes, but that's the chaos that league is. And I enjoyed it. I learned a lot. But for me, to get back to your original question, coaching. That's what drew me here is that, you know, 90% of this job is behind the bench. You have your team and you coach them.
Was that Innsbruck's sales pitch? How did the negotiations work? When did it start and when were they completed? What's the time frame for this?
First interview was probably end of February, early March. I think it was right after Mitch had announced that he was heading to Nuremberg. It was pretty soon after that. I was approached by my European agent who just said, hey, would you consider going back to coach in Europe? And he caught me at the right time. I had just gotten back from a long road trip with the guys where leading scorer got called up and signed a one-way contract in the American League. Second leading scorer separated or got a concussion. Third leading scorer broke his jaw. One of my top D separated his shoulder. Another D got suspended.
So you were used to turnover.
Yes. And so when I was approached about it, you know, I loved my time as a player in Europe and the idea of being able to focus on the one aspect of things that I really love to do, which is coaching, drew me into starting to look in Europe for coaching jobs.
What did you know about Innsbruck in Austria beforehand? Because your playing career brought you to many different countries, but for whatever reason, never you went to the ice hockey league, even though there are many countries in this league.
Yeah, I was at one point, I was about 20 minutes away from signing a two-year contract in Klagenfurt, and it would have been the 14-15 season, I think it was. And I ended up going to Finland instead. More money drew me there. But that was kind of the closest I came. Innsbruck, you know, I've had a lot of former teammates that played here. Actually, all of them I played with on the same team. I think Jonathan Racine was one of them, Daniel Champini, Colton Saucerman. And then I skated with Brady Shaw in Denmark. I played with Nick Albano in Worcester. So there was a number of guys that had played here at one point that I had played with. And so I knew how much fun they had had playing here, how much they loved living in the city and all of the good things that they had to say about it.
So when you started doing your homework, what were the things, like talking to other players who played in the organization, when you started calling them, dialing them up, what were kind of the first two or three questions that you asked them?
One of the first things that I asked about was ownership. That's one of the first things that you kind of think, even as a player, how does ownership treat the, how does ownership treat the staff? How does ownership treat the players? And then, you know, what's the setup at the arena like? What is, the lifestyle setup, because especially as a coach, you know, it's very different. And I'm learning that this year. When you come as a player, you got 25 built-in friends. You know, you're coming to a team. When I come over here as a coach, it's me and my dog. And so it's very different. And just kind of checking to make sure that, you're going to be taken care of here. And everybody spoke very highly of Gunther and the ownership and the way that they treat everybody here. And even though it's a small budget, they treat people the right way.
Just to put this in perspective for listeners out there as well, we're recording this conversation in your office. We're 25 minutes away from you leaving on a bus to Asiago. So there might be another person or two coming in as you're the head coach and you're the guy steering this ship. You mentioned an interesting point because now as a head coach, you're the leader of these men and you're not the built-in friend anymore. How was that transition for you? I mean,
my first year was hard because there were 10 to 12 guys on the team that I played with. And it was very difficult. I mean, that's 10 to 12 guys that on a Saturday night after a game, I went out to the bar until 3-4 in the morning with. And they saw me at my worst and they saw me at my best. And so that definitely was, you know, difficult the first year towing that line between being able to hold guys accountable and being, you know, hard on guys at times when they knew me very well as a person, as a player, as a teammate. So it took a lot of time to figure that out. The second year I made the adjustment. I think there was two guys that were left from my season that I played with because it just wasn't a super functional model.
The sales pitch for Innsbruck, you mentioned the first meeting that you had at the end of February. Obviously, you were looking to coach. I'd say they were looking for a coach too. But what were kind of the requirements, the intangibles Innsbruck was looking for in a head coach?
I think that, you know, what they told me was they wanted somebody young and energetic that really wanted to put in the work. Somebody that was going to take some time to work with the younger players and help with the development side of things, which is one of my favorite aspects of what I do. Those were the two big ones. And, you know, they just wanted somebody that was going to come in and help steer the ship, hopefully in the right direction.
Innsbruck has not always been, but maybe last decade been a stepstone organization. If you playing well in Innsbruck, you're going on to greener pastures, and it's always been a team in flux. But thankfully for Innsbruck fans, Max Steinacher has done a fantastic job over the past couple of years in getting proper talent, good talent to Innsbruck. So what I'm always interested in is how much say you had on the look of the team, on what players, what kind of roles you wanted.
Yeah, so in taking the job, like I said, that was one of the things that I was excited about, that I was going to have a GM that helped construct that team. And obviously, I have some say in it. There were a lot of phone calls through the course of the summer. I watched a lot of video on players and gave my input on who I liked and who I didn't like. And you know, every day you get a new list from agents with 20, 30 players on it. And so there's a lot of names and a lot of things to go through. And so they're, like I said, a lot of back and forth, a lot of discussion. Do you like this guy? Do you like that guy? And at the end of the day, Max makes the decision.
What stands out for you as a player? What's one of the key components? I haven't played yourself for such a long time and very successful on many different levels and leagues. What are you looking for first?
It depends. It really depends. Coachability is a big one. Now knowing the league and what type of league this is and how it functions and how it works, you know, that list probably shifts a little bit here or there, especially now knowing what our organization is about, what we have to offer, the type of player that and type of kind of salary range we can search in. You know, we need the player that is going to be able to do things 200 feet. The guy that's going to work hard. We need to find kind of the stronger, more mature players that physically can handle. I mean, this is a bigger league. There are some big boys in this league. There are some men in this league. And so that's something that would be very important to find. But at the end of the day, it's about who just gets the job done, not necessarily how they get it done. It's about who gets it done.
What are the more interesting signings that your team made during the offseason and summer is... The Japanese forward, Yoshihiro Hirano. And I've been to Japan before and just haven't been there and trying to, or at that time, I indeed was trying to get a feel for the people and I was very hesitant in doing things because when you're doing things the wrong way, the opposite side might take that as an insult. And for heaven's sake, you don't want to insult people abroad. When you're signing a player like this from a country like this who's got all these rules and unwritten rules and things like that, how do you proceed in trying to talk and interact with the people, so with the person like
his,
that?
I mean, his English is great. We don't have a problem there. He's also been removed from Japan for a while playing hockey in North America. You know, I know he's taken a lot of stray bullets this year for a little bit of a slow start, and actually not even a slow start, just a lull in between, because he actually got off to a pretty good start. And I don't want to make excuses for him. He'd probably be pissed if I made excuses for him too. But that guy went through a gauntlet last year, which is another thing to consider when recruiting that I maybe hadn't thought of. But I want to say he played over 100 games last year between preseason playoffs and international play. His season ran from, you know, October all the way through to the beginning of June, went right to Japanese national team camp, came right to our training camp, went to Olympic qualifiers, came back from that, jumped right back in and played that last preseason game against Boatsen. Started the season, I think he had 4 points in the first 5 or 6 games. And then I think he just hit a wall. And then confidence drops with that. But we've been really, really happy with the way he has played the last 4 or 5 games here. And I coached against him 10-12 games last year. I've seen what he can do. And I think we've seen glimpses of it here. And I am excited to continue to watch him grow through the next 5 to 10 games here.
If there was like maybe a little more depth on a team roster, would load management for someone like him be a topic?
100%. 100%. But right now we have 12 healthy forwards and 7 healthy D. So it's very difficult to manage any kind of ice time or low because the games are so important. Every shift is so important. You have to have your best players on the ice as often as you can.
I asked Innsbruck fans on a message board or a fan forum to send me some questions that I could take into or along with me to this conversation, and just speaks for the fan base. Incredibly smart questions, incredibly in-depth questions. We're probably not gonna answer them all, but one of them is concerned with Hirano's role on the power play. It's basically a two-part question. How do you want to see your power play? And evolve, and why? And that's the second part of the question. Is Hirano's one-timer not too big of a topic or too big of a weapon on the power play?
It should be. that's if you come to practice and you look at any of the pre-scouts or any of the directions that are given, it should be. And it is one of the main things that we have talked about that we need on both sides. We need to get more shots. And right now we're having problems setting those shots up. There's a part of us that I think, you know, when the power play came for a while, we thought, okay, it's our time to relax. They've got one less guy, which is not the way it works. So to answer your question, I need us to be a shooting power play. We need to be a shooting power play. And he needs to be a guy that we hit for that shot on a regular basis. I would not want to be the guy in front of that shot blocking it. And we've instructed him, make it hurt. If the guy wants to block it, he can block it. That's fine. But he's not going to do it more than once or twice if you really get a hold of it. So it has been a focus for us getting those pucks up over and back to him so he can hammer those. And going forward over the next couple of games, that is all we've talked about, is we need to be a shooting power play. We just have to get to the middle of the ice, find the guys on the side and hammer away.
Now, when I got on the train, I read a couple of newspapers, and there's some fantastic coverage, daily coverage around the Sharks here in Innsbruck. Genok Selman for the newspaper Krone, Alexander Gruber for the Tyrolean newspaper Tiroler Tageszeitung. And both of them kind of hinted that change might be incoming. Maybe another forward, maybe another defenseman. Are you actively looking at the market, or does it ever stop that you look at what's out there?
I mean, personally, just from my role last year, I never have it out of my head to stop recruiting and thinking about the future. As far as changes this year, I can't speak to that. I haven't had that conversation with anybody within the organization. So I'm not sure where they got that from or where that conversation was had, but you know, if that's the case,
I guess 12 other teams in the league are having these kind of conversations.
Yeah, right, and now, I mean, and players have been moving. They just signed Sentazo in Vorarlberg yesterday, who's a good player. So this is the time of year that there's movement. Anytime you get to that first national team break, you start to see teams figure out who fits, who doesn't, things like that. But that's not something I can speak to right now.
As you're new and you have to try to settle in, new management, new assistant coach, albeit a truly great one with Florian Pedevilla. How does it work between you, management, ownership, presidency? Is it a in-between kind of thing? Are there daily, weekly, monthly meetings? How does one have to think about that?
It's an interesting question. That's one that we'll keep internal for now. You know, the way that we operate and things like that can stay within us. The one thing I can say is I know that Gunther, myself, Nino, the people involved, you know, they care and they want to see the success. And so on a daily basis, it really is about everybody doing their part to make sure that everybody here can be successful.
I do respect, but just to explain the root of the question, it's just interesting. And now, first time head coaches try to fit in an organization. And I always come back to Oliver David, who last year with Salzburg was the one new guy on a championship team. So if Salzburg goes on to not win a championship, it's probably fairly easy to deduct who might be the reason for that. And that was his kind of pressure. And he talked about it on Winter Day Hockey Clock earlier this season. I just found it very interesting because then I started thinking about it. Well, how would I behave if I'm the new guy and everything is new? And you know that the owner and the forward and defenseman and the equipment manager who's great to have had those relationships that go back for what, 10, 15, 20 years. So it's just something to keep in the back of your head. And speaking of a great assistant coach, just came in, but silently.
To answer that and to your point, actually, he has been a major help in that regard. He's been a part of the organization for how many years, Nino? 17 years now as a coach and as a player. And he knows all those relationships. He knows the history of all those relationships. He knows every, so he's been, you know, an awesome roadmap for me in helping navigate where I need to go to who and when and all that stuff. So, you know, very, very thankful that he was in place here, especially coming in as a new head coach, not being able to pick your assistant coach. If I could have picked an assistant coach, it would have been this guy anyway.
Two things that you need to know about him.
We'll really talk about him when he leaves the room. So that's
one of the toughest players you'll ever see. And if someone on the team's out there who's going on a scoring slump, an extended one, just ask him how he coped not scoring for 365 games straight. So
I definitely know he's tough. I know he fought a friend of mine and very, very tough cookie in Matt Pellick when he was in this league. And that's a very scary human that I was fortunate to play with for a year and not have to play against a bunch, but enough to know that it takes some cojones to step up to a guy like that.
I'm sitting on your place, Floga. Shall I continue?
Yeah,
it's just an interesting environment, but I expected nothing less. And we're basically at the tail end of this conversation. I just want to label it Jordan Smotherman Part one. We would have had an additional half an hour, and yeah. probably would have made good use of that too. But again, buses leaving soon. So in this part one of two conversation, we'll find out if part two comes after you guys have won a championship. I just got a couple more questions.
Yep.
At the very top of our off the records conversation, we were talking about the great play of Evan Buitenhuis and him giving you a chance each and every game. And he's been standing on his head for a couple of games now. How long can this go and kind of how will the rotation look when the season really hits that intense stretch with 17 games in 30 days?
So right now?
Yeah.
that stretch?
This stretch up until Christmas, yeah.
You know, we've spoken with Evan and we've asked him to be very honest with us about his body and how he's doing because we don't have games that we can afford to take off right now. We don't have games that we can't afford to have, like I said, our best players on the ice giving us everything that they can. So as long as he's feeling good and comfortable, we are going to ride him. I know that is contradictory to what a lot of people would like to see, and they want to see the young guy get his opportunity. And he will. And we're working right now with him on some confidence stuff. And it's been a tough start to the season for him, to say the least. And so we're trying to set him up for success the best that we can at this point. And the organization went out and they hired a fantastic goalie coach in Ville. And he'll be here full time as soon as he has his baby back home. He and his wife and newborn will be coming this direction. And he's been wonderful for Graz so far to this point. But we're just not quite there yet. And we want to make sure that the next time we get him in there, that he's feeling confident that he's going to be able to perform to the best of his ability.
You were mentioning earlier today, practice, looking at video, preparing video for Asiago. What kind of video did you show the guys? What were the points of emphasis?
Today, you know, pre-scout wise, we talk about how they like to play in the offensive zone, how they like to play in their defensive zone. ways that we can try and exploit that in their defensive zone. Obviously, we focused on the fact that this team scores a lot of goals. They like to play a very open kind of back and forth type of game. They're going to take chances when they see that they have possession of the puck. So we need to be aware of that. But the biggest thing that we focused on and the biggest thing that we need to focus on going forward is at the end of the day, the way the season's gone so far, who we are as a group, it matters so much less who we're playing against, how they play, and how we play. We dictate if we're going to be in the games or not, if we're going to have that jam that we need in the battles, around the net. And so that was what we focused on today. That was the focus of video. The focus of talk is where can we be more efficient? Where can we be stronger? And how can we put the puck through the back of the net?
Got two more questions.
Yep.
How big is that Asiago game?
I mean, it's big. They're all big, though. And that's the thing. We came into this last week, and yeah, we played number one and number two in the league, but we don't ever go into a game thinking we can't win this game. And for me, the Boatswain game, we had, what, two breakaways in the first period that could make that a completely different game. We had some really good opportunities early in the Fairhaven game, could make it a different game. So we have to get points wherever we can. It doesn't matter if the team's behind us in the standings, just in front of us in the standings, we just have to get points.
Now, to get away from the ice, I don't know if you noticed, you probably have noticed, people in the city, people in this region, Tyrol, they're incredibly proud of the region, of their upbringing, of their home state kind of province. What's the most Tyrolean thing that you've done since you accepted this job?
Most Tyrolean thing that I've done? I've done a lot of hiking. I've got my dog here, so we've spent a number of evenings at different Elms, having a cold beer after a hike and having some schnitzel. And I am blanking on what the appetizer is called, but there it's the trio or something like that. So three different appetizers. They're smothered in butter and they're delicious. That's probably the most Tyrolean meal I've had since coming here. But I've got to say, that's it. It's getting to the top of every mountain I can with the dog and exploring outside, because, you know, people have every right to be very proud of this area. It's beautiful. It's an awesome place to live. Unless you don't like to be outside, then you're probably living in the wrong area.
I'll ask your assistant coach to treat you to even more Tyrolean experiences. He might know a thing or two about this environment.
Yeah.
Coach, thank you so much for doing this. I know this was basically squeezed in, but we still got it done. Part one of the German
Smotherman
experience.
Sounds good. I would love to do it again. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks.
Win today, Hockey O'Clock.
Kurz durchatmen bei diesem Wahnsinn. Und das ging rasend schnell. Der Traum vom Finale ist erfüllt. Mittendrin statt nur dabei. Mit Fans, stimmungsvoll und hoffnungsfroh. Nice move, another nice move. Oh, it's gone.